In an era when people are reduced to partisan bickering and squabble over the smallest of matters and never achieve any agreement on anything, we are here to provide a new light in a dark world of journalism. We are the Bipartisan with Riley Lauterbach and Hannah Albor.
Welcome back to the Bipartisan Podcast, your independent source for news, fun, and reform. We are the official podcast of the Student News, so check them out for amazing student-written content at studentpost.org. That's studentpost.org. And if you're a fan of the show, of our show, you can check out our new merch shop. We have mugs and t-shirts that are affordable but still high quality, and it gives you a chance to support us and our little podcast. If you're listening to us on Anchor, be sure to send us a message or a voicemail that we can put into our next show. You can check out our websites for updates, our schedule, and more at sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. And you can check us out on Twitter at bipartisanpodc1. If you're interested in sponsoring us, be sure to call or email today. And we have a lot of big things coming for the show, so be sure to stay tuned. I'm Hannah Albor, your left-leaning co-host.
I'm Riley Lauterbach, your right-leaning co-host.
And let's get into today's news. So before we get into all of our top five stories, we just have a little bit of a breaking news story for you. Kamala Harris, the senator from California, has put her bid in for running for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. And today, as we're recording, is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So be sure to consider how this affects the stories that we tell throughout the day, as well as how we can continue to develop as a nation in order to reach the best sort of equality we can. So let's get into our top five stories. We're starting off with a football showdown. Last night was Sunday, and we had two football games that will decide who will go to the Super Bowl later next month. It was the Rams versus the Saints, in which the Rams won, and the Patriots versus the Chiefs, in which the Patriots won. Riley, what are your opinions on this football showdown?
So I'm not an avid watcher of football. However, what I am is a gambling man. And something that I saw great opportunity the second the Patriots won is the fact that they have been to the Super Bowl three consecutive times at this point. So, as a safe betting man, I am putting money down on them winning the Super Bowl this year, and I'm probably not even going to watch the whole game.
You don't watch the Super Bowl, Riley?
I mean, I watch a little bit of it, but it just, I don't watch the whole game.
I am very much a fan of football and very much not a fan of the Patriots, so we're all go Rams over here in the Albor household. If you can look at the two games that were held yesterday, you had Patrick Mahomes for the Rams and Tom Brady for the Saints, along with Drew Brees for the Patriots and Jared Goff for the Chiefs. And each of those two pairings had both an old quarterback and a younger quarterback. So how do you think that football as a sport is going to shift towards a younger generation?
I mean, it's just like any sport, right? Because of how the nature of the game is, the older players start to get rusty. They're not as valuable as newer, younger blood. So as years progress, like, the whole thing with sports is the same team is not going to be good 20 years in a row, because 20 years later, the entire landscape is going to be different. The players, the coaches, it's going to be entirely different 20 years in the future. So I think a lot of these players are starting to get older. We're going to start to see new players come in. It's just like any sport.
Yeah, I agree. It'll really be interesting to see how the young guard is going to come in and kind of change how football is played as we learn more about the technology behind sports injuries, according, like, in regards to concussions, and how those rules will change and how the younger generations will come and create new dynamics in football. I could talk about football all day.
All right, our next story is about a BuzzFeed-breaking article. Everyone knows how credible BuzzFeed is as a news source. And it ended up calling out Donald Trump and had to deal a lot with the Mueller scandal that recently happened. And after this came out, Trump attacked BuzzFeed, saying that they were the enemy of the people, that they are a disgrace to this country and a disgrace to journalism. So, Hannah, what do you think of this whole debacle going on with BuzzFeed and the Mueller investigation.
Okay, so let's start with the story first, because I have opinions on what Donald Trump said, as always. But BuzzFeed, the article said that Michael Cohen told them, or people who were familiar with Michael Cohen's story told them, that Trump told Michael Cohen to lie to Congress under oath, which is, as you know, a crime. The Mueller's team disputes this, says that Michael Cohen didn't tell them anything about that, but Michael Cohen did admit that he lied to Congress under oath. And what I'm wondering is, if Donald Trump didn't tell him to do it, who did? Who directed him to do that? Because that's not something that you do lightly. You don't just wake up one morning and say, oh, hey, I'm going to lie to Congress as I testify about the Russia investigation. I'm wondering why he would lie.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. Also, the whole thing that BuzzFeed broke this story, though, I mean, we also have to look at BuzzFeed as probably one of the least credible news sources. I mean, they're treated as a joke in the journalism world, even by other media streams, right? Like, if this story had been broken by any other news source, sure, Trump could call out CNN for being fake news, but at least CNN has credibility. It's got journalists behind it. BuzzFeed is just kind of a huge joke, and I think this is kind of like a weird place to be, that like the mainstream media is, or not the mainstream media, but the public is trusting BuzzFeed as one of the mainstream media sources.
I kind of disagree with you there. I mean, the two journalists who published this had Pulitzer Prizes. They're not just teenagers working at BuzzFeed or like undergrads working at BuzzFeed. They're actual reporters. And sure, this one story may have not have been the most truthful. They may have gotten some faulty information, but we should not discredit them as a whole, as a news source, because when you get into that, if one story makes or breaks you as a journalist, then we have a lot of comeuppance coming if one story will end your journalism career. But I also love how Donald Trump is taking Mueller's office at their word here. Like, he's never done that before. He probably will never do that, like, after this. He was like, you know what? Bob Mueller said BuzzFeed was lying, so obviously they're lying. But he's never, ever taking that stance with anything else the office has said.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the story is just, I'm sick of and tired of hearing about it. And the whole fact that, like, BuzzFeed's involved, I don't know. To me, it would have had more weight if it came from, like, a news source I genuinely trusted rather than BuzzFeed. That's kind of a whole joke in the mainstream right now.
Yeah. Let's move on to our next story. So we've all heard at this point about teens from Covington High School who harassed a Native American war veteran at the Indigenous People's March. So these teens from Covington Catholic were sent on a field trip to the anti-abortion March for Life rally earlier that day. And when they were touring the Lincoln Memorial, they came across protesters who the student's mother called them Black Muslims, but they were Hindu protesters who were protesting something, I'm not quite sure, but that the teenagers responded, build the wall, and as Nathan Phillips, the Native American war veteran, came up to them with banging a drum and chanting Native American chants, they got very much in his face, and this all kind of spiraled out of that. So, Riley, how do you think this came about? What do you think the repercussions of it are?
I think, for starters, this is a disgrace. This man was a veteran. He not only fought for his people as, like, a Native American, but he fought for our country. This is disgraceful, even if, for whatever reason, you are a radical enough Republican to think that he is doing something wrong. You should not harass somebody that fought for your right to be here. These are the type of Republicans that give all Republicans a bad name, because not all Republicans are going to go up to minorities and scream, build a wall, in their face. There's a case to be made for the wall, but there's not a case to be made for harassing somebody that protected our nation. I think this is disgraceful, and especially with the 2020 election coming up in a year or so, what's going to happen is this is going to leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths for Republicans, and the whole piling on that a lot of radical Republicans that either take Trump's words out of context or take what he says too literally are going to end up causing the Republican Party to be in a very bad spot for this election and stop a genuinely good Republican from coming in and winning the election.
Yeah, I agree. So I am a Catholic, and I went to Catholic school from daycare through eighth grade, so I can kind of empathize with them because they were on a field trip The fact that they were going to the March for Life is a completely other story. The fact that their school sent them to march against a woman's right to choose is a whole different side to that. But I'm just one, like, they were wearing their school uniform. And as someone who wore a uniform for that amount of time, we were all taught very strictly, you have to represent your school well, your family well. And the fact that they would do this is just completely shocking. I want to know where the adult was in that situation. They had to have had a teacher or a coach or a parent who was with them. And I just don't understand how that adult would let this spiral out of hand. I mean, the school has shut down their Facebook and their Twitter. They're not answering phone calls anymore. And this is just giving Catholic schools as a whole a really bad name. Like, we were all taught to love our neighbor as ourselves. And I hope that these boys take this chance to really learn more about that phrase in the Bible.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This is going to not only give a bad taste in people's mouth towards Republicans, but also towards Catholic schools and private institutions like that. Because, as you said, these kids were sent there by their school to march on a political message. So I think we might see repercussions of people coming out and arguing, like, should schools be allowed to send their students out for a political message like that? Even if in this case, the political message was more tied to religion than it was a political message, since it was a march for life. But yeah, I definitely think we'll see some sort of repercussions from this in the coming months, especially with the government shutdown that has happened. I think this is all going to continue to spiral into more and more chaos for Republicans and Democrats to both start firing back at each other.
Yeah, definitely. And we've heard from the student who was in the very viral video who was staring down that Native American man, and he talked about his side of the story. And I just wanted to mention the fact that we were able to hear his side of the story because he was coming from a place of privilege as, like, a young white man. If this had been a brown or black student, we would definitely not have had the same empathy towards him as we would them.
Yeah, so our next story is about the March for Life that happened in Central Illinois by students into D.C. What they did is, obviously, they marched in D.C. promoting pro-life, against choice. The whole idea of this religious debate that's come up is, should women have the choice to do this? Is it really killing a baby? It's this whole argument that's been going on for years now. And we saw earlier this month the whole march take place with many people talking about the whole love life, choose life, these children are dying, you're killing them early, anti-abortion. So Hannah, what do you think of this march that took place in Washington?
Yeah, so speaking of how I am Catholic and a Democrat and how my parents don't want me to talk about this, but I think that a woman's right to choose is the most important thing that she has. You can choose to have an abortion, you can choose to carry the baby to term, you can choose to give the baby up for adoption, but the fact that a woman or a person with a reproductive system, that of a biological female, should have the rights to decide what they do with their body. Simple as that.
Yeah, I'm not going to get too much into the debate of pro-choice, pro-life, because personally I'm not super religious, so I don't really have too big of a religious bias on here, but I do understand where people that have this religious idea, this, and I'm not huge into science, so I don't actually know if it's killing a baby or not. I'm not a woman, so I haven't done the whole research onto this, but I'm not going to get too much into the debate of pro-life, pro-choice, because it doesn't really apply to me, if that makes sense. I don't want to sound harsh, but it's just kind of where I'm at. What I do want to talk about is how useless I think protesting is. Honestly, I think it's a waste of time, especially when half the nation is protesting one thing, and as we'll get into with the next story, half of the nation is protesting another thing. It's just going to cause nothing to get done because half of the public is screaming at the government to do one thing while the other half is screaming to do the other thing. It means just whoever is in charge is going to decide what they like best, and that's going to be the rule. I think these protests, in my opinion, were just a waste of time. They're not going to do anything at all because already the president we have has his mindset on this. And if half the population screaming at him one thing and the other half is screaming at him another thing, it's going to get nothing done because it's not a majority of the people crying for change. It's half the people crying for change, half the people crying for things to stay the same.
Yeah, I agree with you that protests can be futile, but I think that some real concrete steps we could take in order to kind of end this idea of whether or not you should allow women to have an abortion would be to make safe sex more readily taught in schools. I mean, you can put condoms in schools, you can make birth control more affordable, you can teach students how to have safe sex. I mean, I don't, I've said sex too many times at this point, but, like, that's the concrete way to end this argument, is to make sure that people know how to go about things safely and without the repercussions of a pregnancy.
Yeah, and, like, that brings up the whole debate of how sex education is taught, how in schools people are taught to stay away from sex rather than taught how to safely do it and how to prevent child reproduction. It's just abstinence is key, and they don't teach the valuable things at all. So you want to move into the next story, Hannah?
Yeah, let's get into our next story, which is the Women's March. This weekend on Saturday was the third annual Women's March. The Women's March has come to stand for, or it began as a way to combat the election of Donald Trump and his anti-woman stances. But it has kind of evolved into this other thing, which is just advocating for more women's rights and things of that nature. However, recently, it has been marred by anti-Semitic comments made by the founders and the leaders of the Women's March. So, Riley, what do you think is going on here?
Well, I think, again, at this point, protesting is futile. I've never really seen a huge purpose in it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if it makes these people happy to go out and think they're making a difference, go for it. I think some of the stuff our president has said, some of the stuff a lot of radical Republicans have said, is far too unacceptable. I'm glad people are taking a stance on it. But in my opinion, this stance they're taking isn't really going to do much at all.
I have to disagree with you. I like the idea that women are able to come together, and I don't want to be, like, super fresh or anything, but, like, the signs that they make and, like, the ability for people to come together and wear those pink hats, if that brings them joy and that helps them think that they're doing something to benefit their nation, themselves, they're promoting something good, they're promoting equality and fighting for their own rights. And I think that's something that we should promote in our society, the fact that you should be able to stand up and raise your voice and say, this is wrong and this is how we should fix it.
Yeah, I got nothing against protesters. I think it's fine as long as it doesn't turn to violence. They're just speaking their mind. They're out talking about what they want to talk about, pushing their message. I just don't think it has done anything real in modern history. It did work back in the civil rights era, but now we haven't really seen any sort of effects of any protest take place. It's just kind of been futile. There's been no real change brought about by them. But if they want to go out and do it, as long as they're being safe, they're not causing riots like we've seen in the past and in other countries, as long as they're saying safe, it is a peaceful protest, I am 100% fine with it. I got nothing against it, even if I don't support your political message, which here I completely support the political message they're going for. But with the pro-life, I don't fully support that. But even if I don't support it, they're welcome to go out and protest as long as they stay peaceful. They're trying to push their message. They're trying to encourage people to join. Perfectly fine with me.
And now, bringing you the hardest-hitting journalism out there, it's time for Breaking News.
Welcome back to our Breaking News segment, but this week specifically, we have a very special Breaking News. The Florida edition starring Florida Man. So in our totally real, totally serious Breaking News, we have a man that drunkenly attacked a crocodile and left behind a pair of Crocs in Florida. So, Hannah, what do you think of this development within Florida at a zoo?
Did you think that, like, the crocodiles were, like, offended that he was wearing Crocs and that's why they attacked him? Because, like, if you're a crocodile, right, and you, I mean, assuming that crocodiles are, like, sentient or whatever, but, like, this man's wearing Crocs. They're supposed to be, like, pseudo-crocodile shoes.
I think it's racism as a whole, and we need to remove all croc wearers because it is offending the crocodile population.
I agree. But also, why would you walk into a crocodile enclosure? That's not smart. Our next story is that an armless Florida man was arrested for stabbing a tourist with scissors. Riley, how do you feel about this totally serious topic?
At least the man didn't die, but I gotta give credit to the Florida man that stabbed this dude with his feet. Like, that requires some real skill there. I can't do, like, 90% of the things I do with my hands with my feet. Like, honest props to this man who, despite losing his arms, despite whatever unfortunate condition he had, he was still able to commence an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on a man using only his feet.
I can't even balance on one foot for long enough to, like, even try to grab scissors with my feet. I am very afraid of this man. We should consider using scissors as a more military style.
I totally agree. It is extremely dangerous. So our final story in our breaking news segment is a Florida man threatened to kill somebody with kindness. A man got drunk in Florida and at around midnight wrote kindness on a machete and attacked one of his neighbors. On top of that, this was not the only case of somebody being caught in an unusual circumstance of involving assault in Florida. In the same month, a 34-year-old Pasco County resident was arrested for attacking his father with a slice of pizza. So, Hannah, what do you think of both of these assaults taking place by Florida man in extremely weird circumstances?
You've got to kill them with kindness, Riley. It doesn't matter if you get stabbed as long as, like, you're doing it out of kindness. And also the pizza. I would rather be slapped with a pizza than stabbed.
But I'm just saying, you just said it's, you got to kill them with kindness. I mean, why would you be hit by food when you could eat that food? The kindness is being shared.
The thing is that you have to write kindness on the pizza, and then you're good.
Problem solved.
Problem solved.
All right, we'll see you guys back for our next segment here in a little bit.
Time to see if our hosts have been paying attention to the news. It's time for our current events quiz. I'll ask a question. The hosts will have 20 seconds to come up with an answer, and then we'll see who's right. Everybody ready? Let's go. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our current events quiz. I'm your host, the producer of this fine podcast, Rod Jones, here to host this little quiz here, ask our hosts a few questions about current events, see how much they've been paying attention to the news, as the intro said. So, as usual, 20 seconds on the clock for each answer, and we'll remove that from the podcast so you don't have to listen to 20 seconds of me trying to find something to say. And with that, are you ready, hosts?
I'm ready. Yippers.
All right, then let's get right into it. The first question, starting at the easy end of things, because I hope everyone heard about this story, was quite amazing. What did one man do on a cruise ship? Again, what did one man do on a cruise ship? Now this week, we're trying something new. We have multiple choice questions here. So, what did one man do on a cruise ship? Was it A, start a bar fight? B, make a false bomb threat? C, jump off the ship? Or D, attack the onboard celebrity? You have 20 seconds. All right, everybody, time's up. Let's hear the answers. Hannah, you go.
I think that he jumped off the boat.
All right, and Riley?
I'm going to go make a bomb threat.
Okay, the answer was C, jump off the ship. Unfortunately, shucks. Riley, Hannah gets the point for this question. Last week, 27-year-old Nick Nydev of Vancouver, Washington, posted a video on Instagram showing him taking one small leap for a man and a giant leap of stupidity. He plummeted 100 feet into shark-infested waters. Amazingly, he wasn't seriously injured, but said he could barely walk for 3 days afterwards, according to the Washington Post. The main damage was financial. Nydev and his friends were kicked off the cruise in the Bahamas, and he had to shell out $200 for a plane ticket home from Nassau, the Post said.
Oh my god.
So there you go. Don't jump off a cruise ship, or they will not only ban you from ever going on Royal Caribbean again, but you will have to pay your own airfare back.
There you go.
All right, is everybody ready for a second question?
Ready.
Yes.
All right. Which of the following have announced they are not running for president in 2020? Again, which of the following have announced they are not running for president in 2020? Was it A, Bernie Sanders, B, Michael Avenatti, C, Hillary Clinton, or D, Mike Bloomberg? You have 20 seconds. All right, your time is up. Which of the following have announced they are not running for president in 2020? Bernie Sanders, Michael Avenatti, Hillary Clinton, or Mike Bloomberg? Hannah, we'll hear your answer first.
Michael Bloomberg.
Okay. And
I'm going to go Bernie Sanders. He doesn't want to get cheated out again.
All right. The answer to which of the following have announced they are not running for president is Michael Avenatti, B. So, unfortunately, neither of you get this point. Avenatti's announcement, made in a statement posted on Twitter, came after months of meetings and speaking events that advanced what once seemed to be a completely implausible White House bid. But his fortunes plummet... Implausible White House bid, but his fortunes plummeted since his November arrest on domestic violence allegations, in which he might face a misdemeanor charge amid an ongoing contentious divorce from his second wife.
I think that's very 2019 to announce that you're not running for president on Twitter.
All right, who's ready for our third and final question, the tiebreaker?
I'm ready.
Let's go.
Actually, wait.
Not a tiebreaker. Sorry.
This is not a tiebreaker. Hannah, this is a tie maker if
I'll get it right.
Riley gets this right and Hannah doesn't. So, our third and final question, the hardest one, at least what I think to be the hardest one, but you never know. Which one of the following news studios was undamaged in the recent fire? Again, which one of the following news studios was undamaged in the recent fire? A, CNN. B, Fox News. C, MSNBC. Or D, C-SPAN. You have 20 seconds. All right, your time is up. Riley, we will hear your answer to the question first.
C-SPAN.
All right, and Hannah, your answer.
I'm going to also say C-SPAN.
Unfortunately, you are both wrong. The answer is A, CNN. A fire Sunday morning in Northwest Washington, D.C. damaged studios for Fox News, C-SPAN, and MSNBC, and forced Fox News Sunday to relocate its broadcast to a local affiliate studio. D.C. Fire and EMS tweeted that an electrical fire broke out in the 8th-floor television studio, but nobody was injured. Steve Scully, the political editor for C-SPAN, tweeted shortly after 7 a.m. that the Fox News and C-SPAN studios sustained extensive damage, and MSNBC studio took on extensive smoke and water damage. And all of this happened Sunday, which for us is yesterday, but you guys will be listening tomorrow, so Sunday.
Oh no, that's not
there
good.
There we have it, yeah, it's not good, but, yeah, they're working on recovery efforts now, and it shouldn't take too long to fix the damage, luckily. So, this concludes our wonderful current events quiz, and please listen to this brief message from our wonderful sponsors, and we'll be right back with our three other stories and a lot more. So, keep listening, and thank you.
Thank you again to our amazing sponsors. Let's move into our three other stories. First, we have a story that the FDA may pull e-cigarettes off the market. The FDA is threatening to pull e-cigarettes off the market because of the spike in teenage use of things such as vaping and other tobacco products like that, Juuls and things of the sort. Riley, what do you think about this move by the FDA?
Oh, so they'll leave alcohol and actual tobacco on the market, but they'll take the safer, cleaner, healthier option off the market because teenagers are getting them. Just as many teenagers smoke cigarettes and drink, it's just easier to sneak those things into school than it is a bottle of vodka or an actual cigarette that smells. I mean, it's just easier to sneak them into school. It doesn't mean kids won't continue to smoke tobacco or drink alcohol. It just is going to mean that it's easier to do them in schools. Also, huge economic consequences for this because there's a ginormous market for vapes. So I just think it's a dumb decision overall.
I disagree. I think that this is kind of a good move to the by the FDA. I think that preventing addiction in young people is like a really good reason to take something off of the market, considering how e-cigarettes and Juuls, things of that nature, can lead to teens using actual cigarettes and cigars and things like that. San Antonio, our home city, has raised the age you can buy Juuls and e-cigarettes to 21, like the same it is for cigarettes and for alcohol. So I think if we implement that nationwide, it'd be a good step before we take them off the market to just kind of test the waters and see how that goes.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we don't need to take them off because they're too economically viable. But yeah, definitely raising the age to ensure that it's harder for younger people to get a hand on them is good. So our next story is about a cold wind that is going to kind of strike the United States starting today, the day we're recording, and going through till about the 30th of this month. So Hannah, what do you think of these chills that are going to hit the nation soon?
Yeah, so lows are going to drop into the 30s and 40s below zero in northern Minnesota. And the highs are likely in the teens today on Monday along the Interstate 95 corridor from Boston to New York and Philadelphia. In the teens, I think, you know, things that cold, it is 68 degrees where I live. I would rather not get into below zero temperatures.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's too cold. Just everyone make sure to stay warm, turn on the heater, get a blanket, hot cup of coffee, or hot cocoa.
Yeah, be sure to bring your pets inside. Pets can't do cold. I'm sorry, North, that you have to deal with this. And finally, our last story is that a pipeline explosion in Mexico killed 79 residents. Fuel thieves punctured the Tula-Tuxpan pipeline a few miles north of one of Mexico's main refineries on Friday. Up to 800 people flocked to fill plastic containers from the 7-meter gas line geyser that ensued, and a couple of hours later, it erupted in flames into a powerful explosion. Riley, what do you think about the consequences of this?
I think this is a huge tragedy, and a bunch of innocent people were killed. And it says that around 85 people were damaged as well. Like, it didn't just kill people, it hurt people as well. There are still people sitting in the hospital as a result of this. I think this is a huge tragedy, and I hope that the families of these victims can rest easy, and I hope that the people that are in the hospital right now are able to get better and are able to not die due to their injuries, because that death toll will only continue to count up in the next couple days.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the words like fuel thieves kind of paints a bad light on this, but there are people in Mexico who don't have access to like gas for their cars or like to run their farms. And so that's why a lot of people were up there, was to get a couple of liters so they could go about their daily lives in a way that is economically viable if they can't purchase gasoline from like a gas station the way we can in the United States. And so I do hope that everyone's families are able to recover from this tragedy and we can move forward and find a safer way for Mexican citizens to get access to fuel.
All right, definitely. Now we'll see you guys in the next segment for our BP update.
It's time for the bipartisanship update, presented by the Bipartisan Podcast.
Welcome back to our bipartisanship update, where this week we're going to be talking about a bipartisan plan and a argument going on how to end the government shutdown with the most compromise possible for both sides. This would aim to end the government shutdown, which is the longest our country has ever seen, and in turns talks about discussing for the Republican side giving more funding towards a border wall in specific places while not covering the entire border. Only building up a wall at the points where it's most accessible to immigrants, not fully stopping illegal immigration, but slowing it down, as well as providing more funding to border security so we can have more people guarding the border and protecting the border. So, Hannah, what do you think of this?
So this is day 31 of our shutdown as we're recording, and day 32 when you're listening. So it has been more than a month since the government stopped paying its workers their paychecks and stopped protecting like airports and like checking food and cleaning up national parks and all that stuff. And at this point, I'm tired of it. Like, there are ways that you can go about like funding border security, but you should open the government first. I think that what these bipartisan senators are doing is really great, but nothing's going to happen until party leaders and Donald Trump come together in a bipartisan way, like these senators are doing.
Yeah, I agree. I really do like what was brought forth, because personally, I believe a wall is too outlandish and costs way too much money. But I do believe that we need more border security. It's too easy to get into this country right now, especially because a lot of the illegal immigrants coming in are causing a lot of different crime to fluctuate. So I do like the idea of upping security in parts that are mostly accessible, upping more people on the border rather than building a full-scale wall, protecting the sides that people most of the time want to get in on, as well as causing more people to be able on guarding the border. I like it a lot, but I know both sides of the political spectrum are going to want what they want. I think the Republicans are going to want a full-scale wall, and the Democrats are going to want to keep border security loose. I just don't think we're going to see any result out of this. But it's good that senators are out there trying to compromise, even if our political party leaders won't.
Yeah, I agree. Good job, bipartisanship this week.
Hello, everybody. Rod Jones, the producer, here again to moderate today's discussion. Today's topic is super exciting, and I can't wait to hear what our hosts have to say about it. Socialism in America. So, let's jump right into it. The first thing that our hosts are going to discuss in relation to socialism in America are the causes of the recent explosion of socialism in America that we've seen, because, honestly, this is probably the most popular. Even though the vast majority of the country doesn't support socialism right now, this is probably the most popular and least attacked we've seen socialism in our nation's entire history. So first, Riley, I'm going to you first. What do you think are the causes of the recent socialist explosion in America?
I think it's mostly dissatisfaction with both the Republican and Democratic Party. And we've seen a lot of Democrats especially evolve into socialist Democrats. We saw Bernie Sanders in the 2016 election. I think a lot of the recent explosion comes from dissatisfaction with the idea of the old white man in charge, whether it be a old white Democrat or an old white Republican, pushing older people's ideals on a younger public. I think this is kind of like the young next generation's push at their own idea of political identity.
All right, and Hannah, and what do you think are the causes of the recent socialist explosion in America?
Yeah, I agree with Riley. Dissatisfaction definitely plays a large part in the explosion. Fans of Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez both had very strong opinions on how socialism could help America. I think that also comes along the fact that people realize that the government isn't doing enough to help them in terms of Medicare and healthcare and food stamps and things of that nature. I think that people need more help, and the way that they think they can get it is through pushing ideas of socialism.
Do you think it might be a generational thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of young people realize that they're not going to have the economic benefits that the boomers and Gen X did with things like student loans and greater like cost of living nowadays. And lower pay as well. I think that this is a way to get on a level playing field with what boomers had when they were young.
All right, so going to Riley next. What are the effects of the socialism explosion in America today? What are the effects of that now? Riley, go.
I think it's showing the dissatisfaction with how political leaders are treating our country. But I don't think we will see a socialist president in the near future. I do think it's possible we could see a younger president with semi-socialist ideals, but not full-on socialism. I think the closest we'll get to a socialist is someone promoting like free healthcare, but not full-on socialism. But I do think that right now we're going to see a lot more people running their political campaign on a mixture of traditional politics as well as different socialist ideas.
All right, and Hannah, what are the effects of the growing popularity of socialism now? What has happened as a result of this growing popularity?
I think the biggest one comes in the form of the Democratic primaries and how everyone is very for pushing Medicare for all and having at least some sort of help when it comes to healthcare, along with more support for public schools and more support for food stamps and things of that nature. Ways that people are helped by our government. But the big one, I think, is the Democratic push to the left when it comes to healthcare.
All right, and going to Riley again. What will be the effects in the future if this popularity doesn't fade away?
I personally think it will end up fading in time, but if for whatever reason it does not end up fading, I think we could see both Democrats and Republicans evolve into a more socialist platform. I still think no matter what happens, we will still have the traditional political ideals we've had for forever. Even dating back to pre-Republican and Democrats, political parties still had similar ideas to what Democrats and Republicans have today. So I think we will still see those just with a bit more socialistic ideas in it, like Hannah was saying, with like free healthcare, more support for education. But I don't think we'll see a full-on socialist government in our country at all.
All right, and Hannah, what will be the effects in the future if this wave doesn't fade away?
So I think one of the main effects will be like more help for people who need it in whatever form that takes, whether it be expansion of healthcare or reduced college tuition when it comes to like local colleges, community colleges, or state-funded schools. I think that whatever way that people in America need help from their government, that we will be more willing to give it to them and to help put them on an equal playing field with those who have the means to pay for things on their own.
All right, and finally, our final question. What is your overall, not just opinion, but overall review of socialism? And not just for you, Hannah, but for both of you, not just your opinion on this, but also what socialism has done in the past, and just a general overview of it. Riley?
So, personally, I like the idea of socialism on paper, but I've never really seen it work in practice. I mean, we kind of can look at Canada as a semi-socialist, but not like full-on socialist form of government. I don't think full socialism has ever worked. I don't think it ever will. While I love this idea of giving all to the people, the problem is there are always going to be selfish people. There are always going to be people that are going to abuse the system. And there are always going to be people that are going to take advantage of the government's kindness. So I don't think socialism could ever work. While I want it to, while I think it's a perfect idea for the government to fully support its people, I don't think it can ever work in any logical standpoint. And I think we should start to move away from the idea of full-on socialism and look at semi-pseudo-socialism, where we put in a lot more effort towards the people, but still keep things that require our government to function rather than go 100% pro-people.
And Hannah?
Yeah, so I think that there are a lot of good ideas when it comes to socialism, healthcare and education being the main two for me, but that if we were going to put these things into practice on a larger scale, it would have to be done pretty carefully, because I know a lot of people don't agree with the socialist platform. So I think that we have to keep that balance. But the argument that socialism has never worked really strikes a chord with me, because you can look at America's poverty rate and income inequality and the way that America treats its poor people, and like, you can't tell me with all those statistics that capitalism is working the way it was supposed to. Capitalism itself on paper should work pretty well. I mean, people's ability to make their own businesses and things of that nature, but not everybody has the ability or the means to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. People have these inherent disadvantages, these like cyclical rates of poverty and how poverty is passed from one generation to another. And I think that that's showing how capitalism right now isn't working. So I think we need to move towards a more socialist kind of government in order to make sure that America is figuring out how it can help its people thrive as citizens and do good for our country.
Riley?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. I don't think any government that has ever been made has worked the way it's supposed to. I think almost every government sounds great on paper, but doesn't work in practice. I think it's just trial and error, and I don't think we should try and focus on one government style, but rather mix the best parts of what is necessary for our country. That's why I think a lot of things about socialism could be implemented into our government, but I don't think we should see full-on socialism. I think we should see more funding towards education. I think we should see a lot more things that encourage personal growth and encourage the government helping out people when they're in a tough time. But I also think we should encourage a lot of capitalistic ideals. I think what America needs to do is find that perfect balance in order to help both the people and ourselves stand as a strong nation.
All right, that was such a great discussion, guys. Very interesting topic and very great discussion. So I'm gonna step out now while you guys move on to our future story. Thank you.
And finally, we have our feature story, which is President Trump's offer to Democrats that he made in regards to border funding and opening the government. So what Donald Trump offered was to extend Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, and Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, and make the wall in a way that it isn't a full concrete wall, but rather just sections of steel slats. This was his offer that he put forth Saturday at like 2 in the afternoon, or like 4 in the afternoon Eastern time, which I think is kind of strange, right? Because if you're going to have an Oval Office address, it should be like prime time, weekday stuff, but no, it was like 4 in the afternoon on a Saturday. Anyway, but Riley, what do you think about Trump's offer?
I like it. I think it's not as stupid as a full-blown wall. I think we do need to take care of the DACA in a very, careful manner, because these are children. These are people looking for sanctuary. These aren't the people that are causing problems. They're not the illegal immigrants that are causing a bad name. It's the people coming in here causing crimes, selling drugs, doing illegal things that are the biggest problem. So I like this, that he's giving opportunities to people from DACA rather than just fully cutting them out.
Yeah, so here's my thing. So he ended both DACA and TPS earlier in his administration. Like, he's the one who took those away in the first place. And now he's just bringing us back to the status quo. Like, he's just putting us back to, like, pre-Trump era. And so part of me is wondering, right, if he took DACA and TPS away just so he could use them as, like, bargaining chips later when he needed them, which is totally not good. Like, you can't hold real people hostage for your freaking wall, Mr. Donald Trump. If you're the off chance that you're listening to this, you can't do that. That's, like, putting real people's lives at risk. Even just the immigrants, not even, like, talking about the people who are out of work and, like, aren't getting paid, who are federal workers, who can't buy insulin or tuition or make payments on the student loans to put food on the table. Like, you are just taking people's lives and using them like pawns on a chessboard, and it upsets me a lot.
Yeah, on the off chance you're listening, hi, Mr. Trump. But, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of things I like about Donald Trump. I love his economic policies in particular. But what he's doing with the government shutdown is negatively affecting the people. The people that put him in office, the people that he is supposed to protect. I think that while border security is something we definitely need to look at, and I think it's drastically important, and a lot of Democrats undermined border security, I think the way Donald Trump has gone about this has been one big disaster after another, and I hope what he's offering that the Democrats finally take and just end this this government shutdown once and for good.
Yeah, I mean, like, Democrats offered him the wall in exchange for DACA earlier last year, and he said no. So I'm just wondering what his whole plan is here. If you want my take, don't take it, Nancy. Say no. Mrs. Speaker, you deserve better. DACA kids deserve better. Say no.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to debate here, and I'm sick and tired of hearing about a lot of this. But I hope this government shutdown gets resolved soon enough. So, all right. Now, to end off our show, if you guys want to check out our website for update schedule and more at sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. That is sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. You're able to contact us on Twitter at bipartisanpodc1. That's at bipartisanpodc1. You can email us at thebipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. That's thebipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. You can call or text the number 619-201-0964 to leave a voicemail. Consider checking us out on Anchor to go ahead and send us messages that we can respond to in the podcast. If you want cool perks, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/bipartisanpodcast. We would really appreciate it. If you're interested in sponsoring us, you can call or email us today in order to discuss us with different sponsorship opportunities. And on top of that, we are now selling merch. You can go ahead and check out our merch to get cool bipartisan t-shirts and mugs. And we are now the official podcast of the Student Post. So check them out for some student-written content at thestudentpost.org. I've been your right-leaning co-host, Riley Lauterbach.
I've been your left-leaning co-host, Hannah Elbert.
and come back next week for your independent source of news, fun, and reform. See you guys next
time. Bye, everyone.